Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis.
Jaywalking is extremely hazardous, especially at night. As duly deputized officers of the law, it's imperative we follow the rules. A bat rocket, four fiendish villains, and Aunt Harriet, almost uncovering the most intimate of secrets, has to be Resonance Rewind. Well, we started this off in Edition 101, so we're going to continue it with Edition 102, and hopefully she'll be back live with us in the second part of the program. But Jessica Burtis, of course, your thoughts on the two-parter, of course, as back in the 1960s, the vast majority of Batman episodes were indeed two-parters with cliffhanger endings. That darn Catwoman and Scat Catwoman, what did you make of it?
I really enjoyed it. It was very fun, especially watching a two-part episode. I really am a fan of two-part episodes, or just episodes that they're very similar. But I thought it was so cool seeing one of the original iterations of TV's Catwoman. This is the version that my parents would have grown up seeing, aside from the animated show. So I thought it was fun. And seeing Catwoman have her own sidekick was hilarious. It was a great little juxtaposition with Robin and Batman. And I thought that her sidekick, you know, once I got over the outfit, the pink outfit with the mittens, it was fun.
Well, pink when she's outdoors, but blue when she's indoors.
I was just stuck on the mittens. I was like, what are these oven mitts she's wearing? But it was very funny. And I think I love, something I really, really enjoy about older Batman shows is that they were so low stakes, it felt like, because you know, he's fighting this villain and she's committing theft with all these places. But I feel like a lot of superhero movies now are very dark and intense, and everything is extremely life and death. So it's kind of fun just having an episode you could watch and not feel like nervous watching it. I was kind of just like, you know, the good guys are going to win in the end somehow, some way. And you get to enjoy the funny costumes, which is always a plus. But I thought it was great. I thought the ending with, you know, Catwoman only using up one of her lives was quite clever. So I thought it was fun. It's just fun.
And the heartfelt bat kerchief that Batman had to actually withdraw from his pocket to shed, just a mild tear for the love that never was, that never could be. The ultimate line that even when she was thinking of changing her ways, what would happen with Robin? Well, kill him, as we discussed, quite simply. And all she really wanted was that $1 million so she could actually present that to Little Al to get the bank details and work on that process. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the program, or last week, I should say, we particularly liked the line about how in the Catwoman's New Guernsey lair, the secret lair was very much pointed out and signposted as Catwoman's secret lair here. This is where it is. So lots of other key things from that. So favorite characters then, Jessica?
My favorite character is usually Robin, and it still was with this episode. I think he's great. And of course, I love hearing whatever his little catchphrase in that episode, holy whatever it is. So he's just fun. And this whole episode where he was being mind controlled by Catwoman was so cute in a villainous way. It was like the most adorable little villain plot because all ended well.
Well, good citizenship is its own reward, as Robin said when he was addressing the graduating class at Erinsborough High School. So clearly, even though he was corrupted into evil Robin by the cataphrenic, he still actually sort of managed to be rescued in the end and get sorted through on that. Interesting, though, that you should go for Robin. The vast majority of the team last week certainly went for Julie Newmar's incarnation of Catwoman. I personally went for Leslie Gore as Pussycat, because again, I think her musical inserts were very good as well and proved that she could sing from that point of view too, even though obviously the three henchmen of Spade, Marlowe and Templar were obviously fascinated captive audience by the whole thing. And of course, echoed Sam Spade, Simon Templar, and Philip Marlowe. So critical thing then, as we begin to launch into what in many ways, although it was produced in 2015, so a good few decades after the 1967 Darn Catwoman and Scat Catwoman, is an animated version with, of course, the voice talents of Adam West, Burt Ward, and Julie Newmar, and various others in an epic that we're going to be considering in episode 102 of Resonance Rewind. What is your score for this two-parter going to be?
I think it's going to be 9, because I really can't think of what I didn't enjoy. So I think it's just very high up there. It was just enjoyable.
Poor people have it. Rich people need it. If you eat it, you die. What's the solution? All will be revealed in the latest edition of Resonance Rewind.
Welcome to Gotham Palace.
On tonight's show, Hector and the Ho-Daddies.
Holy, unholy alliance. Our greatest foes have reunited.
Let's go. To the Batmobile.
Holy entree, Batman.
You fiends, you will rue this day.
The only rue here is in the gravy.
Hurricane Crusader, you're our only hope. So fast.
But we're in a hurry, Batman.
Jaywalking is extremely hazardous.
Gosh, yes, you're right, Batman.
Quickly, Robin, to the crosswalk.
There were 17 holies in the whole process, but if brave men weren't willing to take bold risks, we wouldn't be able to move forward as a society. That's the key thing. And somehow, although we've heard from Jessica Burtis about her views on last week's episode, 101, we kind of figured in 102 it is very much back to the basics, back to the Batcave, back to the new driver of the customised Batmobile. Now he can authentically say that he's got that, he's got his driver's licence and so on. It is indeed Robin Pierce. Robin, return of the Caped Crusaders.
The return of the Caped Crusaders, indeed. Well, let's see. 50 years after the 1966 explosion of Batmania, what we had was an animated film called Return of the Caped Crusaders, which reunited Burt Ward, Julie Newmar with Adam West. The rest of the regular cast had sadly passed away. And it was in Warner Brothers Animation's lineup of absolutely amazing and often overlooked animated content. And they decided to go back to the 1960s. And what we have is a very convoluted plot, holy word scramble, Batman, stretching over 78 minutes. And it's hard to explain. It's even harder to make sense of. But I'll just touch up some points here, right? So we're back in the 1960s. All the villains look and the characters look the way that they did back then. So Bruce Wayne, Dick Grayson are watching their favorite show, a variety show called Gotham Palace. And a band, scheduled to be on the show, are missing. They have been replaced by the Catwoman, the Joker, the Penguin, and the Riddler, teaming up once again, as they did in 1966, the United Underworld. What are they up to? Well, they're actually robbing the Acme Atomic Factory of a replication ray, which has an echo of the dehydrator that they had in the Batman movie of 1966. After a brief fight, they basically work their way to an abandoned TV dinner factory. Batman is, of course, and Robin, strapped down to a giant TV dinner, about to be fed into a giant oven to cook. But Catwoman has a plan to scratch Batman with Batnip and make him come on side. Nothing happens. They escape the death trap. Well, then Batman starts to show signs of unreasonable hostility and aggression. He fires Alfred on the spot for allowing Aunt Harriet into Bruce Wayne's study, leaving the poor old butler to wander Skid Row homeless. He deduces that the criminals have gone and taken over a Russian space station. So off to the Bat Rocket they go. They defeat the villains, and Batman again aggressively beats people up. Robin questions this, and he too is thrown out of Wayne Manor, having to elicit Catwoman's help, who herself is now concerned about Batman being a little bit more aggressive than usual. Batman leaves Gotham City and leaves the police to their own devices, only to return sometime later and replace the government officials with replicas of himself, created with this replica ray. What is going on? Are the criminals up to world domination again, or do they have another heinous scheme up their sleeves? Well, Alex, treasures. It's always art treasures, buddy.
Nothing. That's the answer, in case the listener was keen to find out the solution to what the Riddler had actually posed in terms of the piece we said at the start. Nothing, quite simply. Poor people have it. Rich people need it. And if you eat it, you die. Nothing, quite literally. So many wonderful diamond lines here, directed by Rick Moranis, of course, and written by Michael Jelinek, with a screenplay by James Tucker. I think this is certainly something which deserves repeated viewings. It's three episodes, mashed together, really taking the whole essence of Batman 66 above and beyond, including, as you say, lots of nods in the direction to what we were looking at in episode 101 with the Kill Him and the Robin Catwoman relationship, obviously opening up there. I did think, again, so many delightful holies that were coming through in this. I mean, just in no particular order, holy stowaway, holy triple cross, holy unsatisfying ending, holy hydrogen, holy faster pussycat kill kill, my own personal favourite, in terms of holy plie. And of course, such lovely notions as the dead language, parsimony, etc. And Robin, of course, in a nod to his direction last week in terms of the language thing, saying no language can be dead if it lives in your heart. Very much an homage that I feel was really opening up in all sorts of ways here, including, of course, a great collection of alliteration. And I always like alliteration, even if it's the Prince of Perverted Puzzlers, the Rizzler, the Riddler, or indeed that black-hearted bearer of a billion bumbersuits, the Penguin. And, of course, the continuing sort of notion of the dominatrix of devilry, Catwoman, and so on. Takes time to get into it. And initially I felt that you could almost hear, and sadly Adam West only had one more session after this. I mean, he's very much into Family Guy territory here. He sounds a little bit, obviously Burt Ward sounding a little bit, oh, they're all sounding. I mean, the voice is wonderful for staying in place, staying in position and working through that. But there comes a time where it begins to kind of fade into that side of things. But I have to say, huge hats off. And I'm not surprised that they're nominated for the prize for the voice artists who took on board the Riddler, the Joker, and the Penguin, because I thought they were really close to the real thing. Chief O'Hara and Commissioner Gordon, less so. Likewise, Alfred, who seemed to be a little bit off base here and more kind of addressing the kind of comic book issue. But overall, I feel there were lots of sort of key things that were coming across in here. Aunt Harriet, of course, and that opening line in terms of the revelation of the most intimate of secrets. I mean, for those of us who kind of have experienced the, shall we say, post-woke or indeed woke generations with respect to Batman and so on, there were lots of little nods in terms of that direction, in terms of the...
I thought they were actually channeling Frederick Wortham and his anti-comic book tirade of the 1950s, which left us with the Comics Code Authority, where he posited that Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson were, of course, gay, and that it was all subtext for dressing weirdly and going out at night, which I thought was very clever. What also I thought was very clever was you alluded to the wholly unsatisfying ending line by Robin, where Catwoman supposes a future with Bruce, where she's, they're both sitting in a French cafe sipping coffee, which is exactly, of course, what happens in the climax of The Dark Knight Rises. And despite my largely mixed feelings about this film, I think that there are several really ingenious touches. I mean, take the opening montage during the titles. These are Golden Age comics, the covers, redrawn with the personas as portrayed by, you know, in the 1960s by Adam West and Burt Ward. They're easily recognizable covers. But the one that really, really got me as really clever, there's a blink and you'll miss it shot of the Batcave. And behind Batman, there are two like glass display cabinets with two black and white Batman costumes in. And these are basically the Batman suits from the two black and white serials from the 1940s, which were the only live action Batman preceding Adam West. And I thought that was a really nice touch. I'm also a big fan of those serials. Overall, though, I think they made a critical mistake. They, as the kids say, I think they jumped the shark. I think you said it was kind of hard to get into. I got into it immediately, but at the time that they brought in the Bat Rocket, they lost me completely because I felt they had gone too far. In trying to pay homage to the TV series, I thought they just jumped the shark and we wouldn't get a Bat Rocket in the TV series. And it kind of smacked of 1950s sci-fi Batman, which to me, as a fan, is the least satisfactory incarnation of him. Thankfully, just a couple of years before I was born.
Robin, an intergalactic rocket is just another tool in a crime fighter's arsenal. I mean, surely, just that alone evidences the whole thing, as well as the bat whirly birds as well.
Even I, as a Robin, couldn't look Adam West in the eye and say, gee, Batman, when you put it that way, yeah, I can see you're right, because no. I think that overall, there's an awful lot of plot going on here. And every time you think, okay, it's done, they bring out something new, like the remarkable getaway in the Penguin's blimp, which again echoes the 1966 film. And the 66 film, I think, is a work of genius. But this, they over-egged the pudding, I think. And to, in order to try and back up what I'm saying here, controversial as it may be, as a Batman fan, I thought the TV series, which, let's face it, brought me into the whole Batman thing back in 1966, I could... As a six-year-old, I took it all dreadfully seriously, as I suspect would you and any number of, you know, like-aged people of that time. Over the years, you begin to see that it's too layered. It's very clever. It's fantastic adventure for the kids, and it's a wry comedy for the older, more sophisticated viewer. This kind of misses the point completely. Batman the series was based on comic books, as we know, which were kind of cartoony at the time. And the TV series, the live-action TV series, consequently, was made to look cartoony as a reflection of those. So what you have here is a cartoon version of a live-action series that was made to look cartoony because the comic books it was based on were cartoony at the time. So I have to ask, what is the point? Because by the third quarter, I felt I was watching one of those oversimplified, improbably plotted cartoons by either Hanna-Barbera or Filmation in the 1970s, not really worthy of being put out under the Warner Brothers mantle, which has brought us things like The Dark Knight Returns, the two-part adaptation of that. Now, I was kind of worried about Adam West sound. He sounded his age in this, and I say this as an Adam West fan. There's a DVD documentary out, the history of, you know, superhero comics, which was put out on PBS in America, and they have many luminaries involved with the industry, quoting vines and stuff like that. And Adam West in this, and it was released, I think, about 4 years ago, utters a few of the lines given to Batman by Frank Miller in the Dark Knight Returns graphic novel. And he says them as almost Adam West does Clint Eastwood. And it brings a chill down my throat. And rather than go back to 1966 and speak with an older man's voice and, you know, have Batman portrayed as still being in his late 30s, that's what I would have liked to see. Much as I enjoy their version of Dark Knight Returns, I would have liked to have seen Adam West do a serious portrayal. That would have been something to really, really watch, and is a missed opportunity. But of course, they did a sequel to this, Batman versus Two-Face, which I think, for one thing alone, is a work of sheer genius. They bring in Two-Face, which of course was a big no-go in the 1960s, and they portray him, the actor, the voice actor, William Shatner, absolute genius. Which, you know, we should take a look at that one day. But this one, it hit the mark in many ways with many of the Easter egg and little background details. But overall, it kind of missed it as well. I wouldn't call this a really good homage, because we watched The Avengers a couple of weeks ago with Patrick McNee and Diana Rigg. And it struck me then that The Avengers is a series, you couldn't do that series now, because that time has passed. That kind of fantasy, we don't live in that kind of world which can produce that kind of fantasy anymore. We watch these things with wistful nostalgia, if you like. And the same is true of the Batman TV series. And to bring that back, or to try and bring that back, is usually going to kind of be a mistake, in my opinion.
I hate to the core of my being when diplomacy is destroyed by myopic pride. Again, crucial thing. You want to go nuts? Let's go nuts. He's channeling Michael Keaton, for goodness sake.
Absolutely he is, yes.
And again, these are the sort of areas where you mentioned, obviously, the nuggets in the Batcave, but the actual dinosaur from, of course, the comic book iterations of the Batman.
Oh, from
as
Terror
well.
On Dinosaur Island in the early 1940s, and the giant Joker card as well.
All in good place from that point of view. Plus, of course, for the double entendre aficionados, we have the classic line, which surely actually addresses the whole essence of gender relations. It's impolite to rub your masculine superiority in a woman's face. Just a special pause I actually gave for
it
that.
It leaves me speechless.
Yeah, again, it did work with that. Also, for the benefit of residents in terms of our contemporary world, from that perspective, it's well worth noting the response that was actually given to the Chief O'Hara and Commissioner Gordon when they were watching television. It's not me you need to apologise to. It's the law-abiding taxpayers of Gotham City. Surely, if anything was cried out for politicians to actually deal with that in the 21st century, it's not me you need to apologise to, it's the law-abiding taxpayers of Gotham City. Has to be the thing. Gotham City, of course...
You know, our government should actually listen to Adam West. You also have to give it, of course, to a film where Catwoman tries to give Batman the antidote to the Batnip. But Batman, of course, is one step ahead and takes the bat antidote, which is almost as tricky as when Robin is left to die in the Batmobile's atomic pile in the Batcave. He survives because he takes the bat anti-isotope spray. Wow. Never leave home without it.
Holy counteracting potions. Clearly, and holy triple cross as well. We've just been listening to some of the music. We've had echoes of the music that's been coming through from that point of view. The soundtrack is available. I don't think it's necessarily the strongest soundtrack that we've actually encountered in terms of the Bat. I think Danny Elfman probably is responsible for most of that. But the original lines are indeed channeled by the composers and indeed the work of Christopher Carter, Lolita Ritmanis, and Michael McQuiston, I think, coming to the fore there. And again, I thought even the almost Toy Story-esque element or Pixar elements that you have the boogieing down Batman and Catwoman on the end credits also actually works well in terms of the cartoon elements and structures within that. It was actually nominated for an Annie Award for Outstanding Achievement in Music in an Animated Feature Production back in 2017. And as mentioned, the Behind the Voice Actors Award was nominated Best Male Vocal Performance in a TV Special, Direct-to-DVD Title, or indeed Short, Jeff Bergman as the voice of the Joker. And I did feel that Jeff Bergman certainly did manage to capture Cesar Romero at his most maniacal. So again, I think kudos from that side of things there. Holy Hitchhiker, Holy Zero G's, again. I think that I can't. In the end, I think my tally came up to, I think, 17 holies that were featured in there, which has to be a record, because even in the series which featured the longest ever holy, Holy Priceless Collection of Etruscan Snoods, a King Tut episode, I don't think Burt Ward was quite in terms of the holy of holies from that side of things there.
I remember a show called Hollywood Treasures, and they would seek out old props and see how much they would get at auction and stuff like that. And in one particular episode, they had Burt Ward. And they asked him about the holies, and he said that a lot of them he actually made up himself. And the follow-up question was there any holy that they wouldn't let you say? And he said, yes. And I was never able to get away with it. No, and it wasn't even a double entendre. This is family friendly, folks. And the one that he wanted to say was, holy strawberries, Batman, we're in a jam.
Thank you.
And allowing for that, of course, brings us round to the favourite characters. And if people are wondering why are they not actually having some young input in terms of this, it's a mixture of jobs, it's a mixture of having to see the movie and so on and so forth. I'm sure we'll be restoring the Resonance Rewind team in the not too distant future. I was delighted to see, in terms of the Criminal Collection, a lot of the TV villains, like Bookworm, like Mr. Freeze, like Come Back Shane, It's the Way You Play the Game, and all of those characters who, of course, were released from Gotham Penitentiary, or shall we say they were sprung from Gotham Penitentiary by the disguised Robin and the disguised Catwoman as well. And I think that worked extremely well in terms of, again, having, again, nods in the direction to that, even though they were all completely taken out by the cloned Batman who had taken over Gotham City and effectively ran the whole sequence from that perspective as well. So in terms of favourite character, though, I'll probably, in this particular instance, go for Catwoman, because again, I thought that her line, which basically won it for me, was when she actually rescues the Boy Wonder and says, "I can't believe I'm doing this," as he falls to his impending doom from the blimp that he's been battling on and so on. And again, you have to stretch credibility certainly in terms of the way they could remain their balance and retain their balance there. But whilst we're also talking about that, it's also worth noting the discipline of ballet, that the discipline of ballet promotes balance, flexibility, and strength, all useful tools in our never-ending fight against crime. So that's very important to actually see that. Again, a nice connection with respect to the Burt Ward era of wearing tights and indeed pixie boots, which I think, again, are critical for the whole system in terms of that's concerned. And we've already mentioned the onset of when you're older, you'll come to appreciate the pungent allure of the feminine mystique, old chum. Which, even though Batman was still under the influence there, I think is a good way of actually addressing that. But I am saying, as I say, for me, favourite character in this particular instance, unlike, as I say, Darn Catwoman and Scat Catwoman, in which, of course, it went to Pussycat, I will give this one to Julie Newmar for her vocalisation as Catwoman. What about yourself, Robin?
I think so, because Catwoman is such a fascinating character. She's representative of a cat. I mean, if you've ever had a cat, anybody who's ever had a cat will tell you that one minute it's rubbing itself in your leg and you can stroke it, and in a split second, for no reason known to man, it's basically taking off every layer of skin on your hand. And the next minute, it's friendly again. And this is what Catwoman does in that cat-like way. Now, I'm a big, big fan of Adam West, and he has that distinctive voice. But in this, he sounded his age, even though Batman himself was not portrayed as being that age. Burt Ward also did not sound like a teenager. It reminded me a bit of listening to The Simpsons these days. Bart Simpson speaks with a voice of a woman in late middle age, which, of course, is who voices him. It would be Catwoman because, I don't know if they kind of cleaned up Julie Newmar's voice at all, if they did anything with it, but she sounded pretty much the same sassy self that she did back in 1966, 67, where we were at last week. And of course, she's got to be well there in her 80s now. And she does that sort of provocative, playful, but get too close, you're going to lose an eye kind of thing so well, even in an animated movie.
Bolsheviks in Belgravia, of course, the mop tops of Hector and the Ho Daddies, all echoing the whole system, and indeed even Miranda Monroe.
The Ho Daddies were in a 1964 issue of Batman or Detective Story. They were kidnapped. I remember that because I reread that issue only a couple of months ago. So again, that was another kind of Easter egg to the past.
Exactly. And I think that certainly demonstrates why the quality is maintained, including the Fitzsimmons TV Dinner Factory, when, again, another one of those wonderful golden nuggets. It's starting to heat up, Batman, but we do smell delicious.
Now, I would have rather it be the Fitzwilliams Dinner Factory, of course.
Of course, but perhaps we'd best not go there, because we would obviously have some lemon tart dessert to actually free ourselves up with the citric acid there, which would enable us to make another daring escape from the whole system.
And the, of course, the sad part of this is, if I was 6 years old and watching this film, I would have swallowed that and I would have been convinced that lemon tart can cut through rope.
Exactly.
In seconds.
And as we said, Gotham Palace is on every crime fighter's rationale for needing mindless entertainment sometimes. Every crime fighter needs some mindless entertainment. That is why, overall, in terms of, from my own perspective, and I appreciate we may well hear, as we did at the start of this program, maybe we started a new trend in the second century of Resonance Rewinds, by which we actually get the reviews of some of our panel at the start of the program, referring to last week's show before, of course, we get to next week's show. It's like a time context from that point of view. But I'm going to go for a 9.5 for Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders. What, pray, are you going to go for it, Robin?
Oh, 9.5. I didn't see that coming. Well, for the reasons that I've outlined, I'm going to go with 5.
Wow. There you go.
Because I didn't think it was as satisfying as I wanted it to be.
No, I think the development, the way in which they had an acknowledgement of original canon and they worked through that worked well for me. And
yeah, that's what gets it a 5, because at the end of my viewing yesterday, actually, it was hovering into a 4 if it was lucky. Mm. But our discussion tonight has given it another point.
There you go.
Carry on another hour, it'll be a 9.
It just goes to show, next week on Resonance Rewind, we encounter the Who family. Yes, that'd be Grandfather Who and Granddaughter Who, and of course Doctor who will of course be in full force with Roy Castle, not record breaking, unless of course you refer to his record breaking line in terms of latter television history, but actually generally doing some pratfalls and other delightful things, as indeed they take on board the villainy and daring dastardliness of those corrupted citizens of the planet Skaro, the Daleks. Yes, it's the movie version, totally away from canon, or at least in current canon, unless, of course, it's just another parallel dimension that we're seeing. Doctor Who and the Daleks will be Resonance Rewinded for episode 103. Keep on resonating.